Welcome back to The Dive, episode 7 of season 6. What's our sponsor? Quick, boom, go.
Elden Ring, it's coming out, and we're all going to quit our jobs so we can play all day.
No one's working Friday of Super Week. It's actually going to be no casters.
Yeah, we haven't told them yet, though.
No, by the way,
surprise,
guys,
none of us are coming to work.
I actually wore my You Died shirt today in honor of Elden Ring, so, and then it's too cold, so I put a hoodie on, too. But like,
it is actually freezing in here.
Yeah, it's always cold.
Okay, yeah. Because I came in cold with my cold shower, and I was still shivering, and I was like, when am I going to...
I feel like I'm at a natural disadvantage because, like, I don't have... You guys basically have a hat, you know? You guys have a hair hat.
True.
Heat through your head.
You're just losing heat.
I'm just bleeding heat out here.
That is actually...
And the other way you lose it is by cold ingestion. Yeah. So we're not very smart.
That's actually a myth that of the heat is lost out of you.
I don't know where...
Oh, is it? I always heard that.
Yeah, it's
interesting because, like, I mean, obviously it just makes sense you're warmer because you have something on, but I always found I was massively warmer with just a hat on, even if I was, like, more underdressed.
Mm-hmm. So your extremities get less blood flow, so you're always going to feel most
cold. My hands and feet are always permanently
cold. Did you know that kangaroos lick their wrists to cool down because that's where the blood flow is and it cools their blood?
We've got so many cool little tidbits of knowledge for y'all.
Do you want any about League? Because we're not talking about it today.
It's a science podcast. We're in there. All right. Let's get into it. There's an elephant in the room. Everyone's been thinking about it. Yesterday was National Margarita Day, and Elias is really hungover. So
that's why this show's off to a rocky start. Our producer couldn't write anything. He's hungover.
And also, there was some other news. LS gone from Cloud9. Mm-hmm. And that is what it feels like everyone has been talking about since the news came, I guess, Saturday.
Because the timing of it was ridiculous.
Yeah, the timing
right
was
before new. Their game?
Yeah.
Okay, I think the hardest part for this discussion is actually going to be us organizing.
There's a lot to say, yeah.
I'll start with the timing, because the timing to me is the most egregious part. With what I've heard, nothing illegal went on, no one was hurt, which was my immediate reaction when they were saying right before they're going to go play this game.
Yeah, what crazy thing
I was like,
happened.
Oh my God, something crazy
LS
must have happened.
Jack in the head, you know, like, no.
Yeah, like, something insane must have happened because from the public eye, the team is winning. You know, they're 4-1 at the time. Everything seems to be going great. The new picks are working out. You know, there's all this, you know, popularity building, social pushes behind it. But then when I started, you know, hearing rumors and stuff from people about what, like, it seems like very normal things. So then I was at the point where it felt like it was created, like there was something nefarious going on, but there was actually just a normal break there. So I was kind of very disappointed, in fact, that they didn't just say some of the normal things and have that be the statement, because now it feels like there's all this pressure and everybody's pointing fingers and everybody's up in arms and
Like, is it visa issues? Was it like governments getting involved?
Yeah,
and stuff?
If you don't say anything, the public now is in a state where like their
imagination
public defaults to detrust now. And so they're always going to be
especially
looking
when
deeper.
It's a beloved figure that they already, you know, like have an attachment.
Well,
and
things seem to be going well.
Yeah.
So like,
and things
you're going against the status quo when you make a change like this. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't say why, people assume the worst, but then you never correct that sentiment.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I will say is like my immediate thought was like, there's a lot of people I felt like defaulted to like, wow, like Cloud9 is like, they're so dumb. Like, why would they just get rid of them for no reason? And to me, it's like, you would have to think Cloud9 is really, really stupid to believe that when things are going pretty well, record-wise, when everyone's super excited about the team, super hyped about the new picks, you know, excited for LS, it's doing really good things, I think, for the team and for the viewership and for everything, that they would fire him for no reason, right? So, like, you immediately know that clearly there's enough of a negative from their opinion and, like, their view going on that it is, you know, like, outweighing all of the obvious positives that the community is seeing, right? Because for me, it was really disappointing to actually see that, hey, he's gone, because it didn't feel like we got enough time to actually see, does this work or does it not work? You won, you played 4 games, you won 3, and Cloud9 has good players and is a good team. Winning 3 out of 4 games at the start with any sort of strategy doesn't really prove anything, unfortunately. And I was really looking forward to it and hoping to see, like, hey, what does this look like over an entire year?
What does it look like in best of fives after people are prepping for you and stuff?
Exactly.
And it's not just the first literally 2 weeks of a split.
Exactly. And you were saying this earlier, Mark. We were talking about this earlier before we actually came on the show. The idea that it's like you just get these random strategies sometimes that pop up here and there. Like a four-game sample size, unfortunately, proves literally nothing, right? And I think that is kind of like the point that I'm the most disappointed with. Is I will really, really wanted to see how does this play out over the full year. Can he hit those lofty goals that he stated? He said, hey, at minimum, I want to win both the LCS championships and get to MSI and go semifinals at Worlds.
Yeah.
Those are the goals. And those were huge. And that's why I think so many people were excited one way or the other. Either you wanted to say, yeah, I knew he was going to fail, or yep, I always believed him. And you kind of wanted to see that play out. And unfortunately, we're not going to get to.
Yeah, and we should touch on the things that they did end up saying, because they did end up releasing this video that didn't have many more details, but some of the things that they also key into were that this was an ongoing process that they were working through and they saw coming. And so to me, that just makes the issue I was bringing up before first of the timing thing more egregious, if presumably, you know, player, staff or whatever, and everybody is working on this and seeing this problem coming and there's tension building or things are not working out leading up, then I keep coming back to why is this instant, you know, release right before the game creating more pressure sort of scenario necessary? If they had the problems previously and they're working towards it for other weeks, could they not just do one more weekend? And then, you know, plan out an explanation and videos and stuff like that for the week following, so that you don't have all this prying speculation. And
I mean, the thing is about this is like assuming people are working in their best interest. There's a number of reasons why you would not take to the stage with a coach who you're going to be releasing. It's not like people are not happy with how things are going, and you don't want that person making the decisions on stage that day, potentially, for example. You know, if that's one of the reasons, that will be why you do it last minute, because you couldn't come to a work. You're trying to make something work all week long, and it comes to a head. You have a final meeting, the two sides can't come to an agreement, and it's like, well, we're not going to let you go on stage. And he's like, well, I'm not going to do this. And then, you know, you have this potential thing, and that's why Fudge says in his interview, it's best for both parties, potentially. And I think that's the problem when you don't get this clarity, is because you're left with these questions like, why did it have to be right now? Like, what happened to cause this? And you just don't get any answers. And you're left with either assuming that the org did something incompetent, LS did something incompetent. It was maybe just a never seeing eye to eye, and you don't get any answers. Because you can make any case you want at this point. Like, I just made a case. Is it right? Who can say? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough, right? And I think at the end of the day, like, there was there's a lot of talk about the timing and like how they could have done it. I think you could do it. There was a suggestion, Elisa's fiance Danielle, she's a social media expert, like, you know, runs social media for some companies and stuff. And she actually had a cool thread talking about like, hey, like some ways that you could handle this that could have actually made it received differently. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't want him on stage, you don't have him on stage that week, basically. And then you say, hey, like, you know, he's like out for this week. You don't have to give a ton of details, but that gives you some time to actually plan and release when the announcement actually comes out. Then you have a video like alongside that mm-hmm. is giving some sort of an explanation, not just like, instead of, hey, he's not going to be here this week, it's like, boom, he's gone, and there's no info, there's kind of radio silence. And I think that's where a lot of the outrage comes from, is like, people are like, hey, like, you told us this is the direction of Cloud9, like, what the hell happened? And Cloud9 fans want to know, right? And LS fans want to know.
This is my biggest complaint right now with both this situation and the TSM situation. I've done a lot of thinking about it over like the last week. And it's like, if I was a fan of the league and I didn't know anything and I didn't have any sources, like, how can you not be outraged when you get literally no information? You get told to buy in on this LS vision by the org. You get told to buy in this LDL project by TSM. And they cut these things, these projects, partway through, and they don't give you anything substantive to hold on to. And it's not about information for me. It's about like emotional core of like, why would I keep believing in you? And you don't give me answers. And a lot of these conversations are so PR and sanitized and corpo talk that you don't really connect emotionally with that video. Like, I didn't really feel any emotion in that video from C9, let alone information. And so like right now, I think fans are in this really tough spot where they're mad at their orgs for not giving information. The orgs are actually, in traditional sports, not the ones who do this. It's a massive failing of the league ecosystem. And I see your hand up, so I'll let you chime in here before I pivot.
Whoa.
Do you want to?
You just like laid out the title for your.
Yeah, that's my thesis that I'll get into in a second. But I don't know if you had something else before I went in there.
I was just going to touch on some of the reasons why typically organizations would not want to, release a lot of details. You generally don't want to get into like a mudslinging fight where both parties then are accusing each other and they're both kind of dragged down. But that's kind of the nuance of public relations, where you need to find a middle ground between the two extremes mm-hmm. of mudslinging and just pulling each other down and all these accusations going back and forth and saying nothing, because
then you just lose fans.
The public changes and learns over time. 20 years ago, when people, or big organizations first started making like generic apologies and stuff, people were like, oh my God, they apologized? The coal mines just told us to go screw ourselves and die whenever we got sick.
Yeah.
That's a great improvement. Okay, then you fast forward a little bit more. Oh, your apology actually has to have, some sort of detail in it, or, some grain of salt or some sort of reasoning.
There's so much talk about this. My whole blame game this week is going to be about this. I haven't released it yet. But
I'm really excited.
If you look at how brand and consumer-focused brands have changed their messaging in the last 10 years, it is entirely about, on Twitter, feeling like a real person. No. There's like the corpo talk is dead. Like, look at these brands, and like people seem to resonate with that more.
And Nate Shot,
Nate Shot I bring up in my video of someone who can tell you nothing but make you feel like he really cares, and he is so genuine and charismatic. And like, that's something that the brands are failing on in that point. Like, if you don't want to say anything, fine, but you have to find a way to communicate to your fans to still care.
Yeah.
And I feel like Jack, in that thing, tried to make a couple strong statements, but then kind of backed down and didn't quite navigate the situation, like the thing well. When he's like, there was a line he said where he's like, and I want to be clear, the players, the staff, and the management all were aware of the frustrations. And it's like, wait, did they agree with the frustrations? Do they agree with your perspective? Are you saying that the whole company was aligned with this change? Or are you just saying that people kind of knew it existed? And like, these kinds of like very fine lines you're walking can really sway how people feel about it if you navigate them correctly. And I just don't feel like currently the orgs are like way too far on the corpo side, and fans are getting frustrated.
Some of the other ones I was going to list were, sometimes actually the contracts can get crazy and have actual lines in it about that. The contracts nowadays, like almost anything can be written into these things. So there can also be legal stuff in some of the scenarios. I don't think that's true. And what's makes it even more frustrating after like some leaks have started happening is when I hear the leaks, I'm like, oh, why is that? Like, why is that not just out there? Because that seems
so
kind of reasonable.
This is the traditional sports media thing and why our ecosystem is broken. What happens is, in traditional sports, orgs really don't say that much more than what the orgs are saying.
The GM comes out, does a press conference.
Moving
in a new direction. We're proud of the team. We're going to go forward.
He's a great coach. We just didn't believe that this could work, going forward, yada, yada, yada. And then what happens is, the org, oftentimes, most likely, is the one leaking this information to reporters. But somehow, reporters get their hands on what really went down, and then suddenly... And I did this to make sure I wasn't going crazy. I just looked up the most random, most recent NFL coach firing, and I just Googled his name, firing. And you get tons of reports from reporters with different sources saying, sources say it was management personnel conflict where they wanted to go in one direction, the coach wanted to go in another. And you get all these things. And you get insight that fans can then start forming their own opinion on. And then what happens is us, we're pundits. We're not reporters. We're not leakers. We're calling cowards. Yeah. We are the people who react to that news and try and interpret it for fans.
Then we can give you our opinion.
But this whole communication chain is broken right now in the league system, where coach gets fired, orgs say nothing, no media reports it, and then all of us don't want to be leakers. And so we try and navigate these conversations with like, kind of honestly not great speculation, because
and who wants to hear that? Like, fans don't want to hear us
be like, I guess we'll have to wait.
Yeah, nobody wants to hear us be like, well, I've heard some stuff and you would want to hear it too. Like,
yeah. And so like our positions are awkward, because either we pretend we don't know and we're effectively lying, or we try to speculate and guide the conversation while doing this kind of tongue-in-cheek, like, I know, but I can't say. And like, I don't even care about who's right or who's wrong or who you should blame. I'm just thinking about it from the fan perspective of how frustrating this season must be with two of your biggest orgs in the scene pivoting from their preseason messaging and not getting anything from anyone to like help you know how to feel or think.
Yeah, especially, you know, if it's justified, right? It's like it's one of those things where it's so weird that it's like if Cloud9, if you believe that Cloud9 has some intelligent people working there and they're making a decision that they felt that they had to make that is like, you know, the positives of it are going to outweigh the like very obvious negatives that they are now facing, where everyone's like, screw Cloud9, I'm never going to watch another game, I'm selling my merch, I'm, you know, like burning my Cloud9 flag, whatever. Then clearly like they felt like they had to do this. And also, I mean, I think the really sad part is, and we actually got a question about this. This one comes from Kaiwabara. As a C9 superfan, do I still hold out international hopes and dreams for them for this year? I'm scared of the staff mental booming. And I think that like that is a sentiment that a lot of people have. And it's really sad because the reality is the team is still really fucking good. They have a bunch of great coaches, a lot of them actually who share many of the same philosophies with LS. Like the draft, even after LS was like let go or separated or whatever you want to call it, Max Waldo is the new head coach.
Mm-hmm. The second draft with the Kartha Senna bottom.
The Kartha Senna one, people would have been popping off about that draft if LS was on stage when it happened, because it was actually really a cool comp where you have Senna with cross map ultimate, you have Nocturne, you have Karthus, you're going to do this hardcore engage comp. The Karthus is even really cool into this roaming smite thing, because even though he chain dies, he picks up the wave every time he dies and gets dove with the Karthus passive. So like there was some really cool stuff that happened. And I feel like people like aren't talking about it and thinking about it because everyone is hyper-focused, and understandably so, on their disappointment with the LS departure. So, I mean, can you still have hopes and dreams? Yes, absolutely. I don't think that the team has massively changed. I think that, you know, the players are still incredible. There's a lot of great coaching staff at Cloud9. I'm still really excited for the team to see where it goes. It's going to be a bump in the road, of course. It's going to be, you know, difficult for some of the people to maybe work past this. But, like, we're early in the year to like, throw international aspirations at Worlds out 2 weeks into spring makes no sense when this is a team that is still built in a really impressive way.
Yeah, and we were talking about it during that champ select for that game. It was really intelligent. You know, both like talking about the players are good, as well as the draft still being intelligent, because every single champion has access to the backline, to the Jinx, playing yep. against the carry Jinx comp. And we're, you know, it's setting it up as one of these super exciting strategy versus counter strategy moments that are rare, that people are looking for, that are the most fun to watch. You know, getting outside of the standard draft box is still going to be a part, you know, I feel like, of this organization, because again, like you're saying, before LS even got there, a lot of these components in Cloud9 were LS related, basically. You know, they all work very closely with him. They're all good relationships with him. They're all, you know, a lot of them are friends with him. So I'm still excited. I know it is a definite down point right now. And I'm, like we were talking about, also
we're disappointed.
Very, very frustrated with the communication, especially on it. But yeah, I don't think it's a like boom, blow it all up situation.
And Max Waldo actually had a really good interview with Travis. Travis is kind of asking about it, like, hey, like people are disappointed. Does it mean it's like the death of like cool comps and you know these unique picks? And Max Waldo said, hey, even when LS was here, the plan was never to come out every single week and do some crazy shit. The plan was to be able to play standard and to be able to do some crazy cool picks when it actually made sense, right? And he's like, and I don't think I'm leaking anything by saying this. He's like, we want to be able to do everything well, right? Like that is our goal. That is what we're trying to build towards. Yeah. And it was kind of funny because it was almost like, you could see, like, he's like, am I crazy? Like, do the other teams not want to be able to do this? Like, everyone wants to be able to do this, right? Like, you want to play standard yeah. and have that when it's the best option, but you also want to be able to do Senna, Karthus, Soraka mid when you're like, oh, hey, like, they did this, and, like, this is going to slap it, and we have the confidence to bring it out.
Yeah, I mean, from the fan perspective, those are the ones that are the fun to watch, though. So yeah. the fans are like, I want to see every game, I want to tune in and see some wild stuff picked, and I want to see it win. You know, yep. that's the best case scenario. When you get to see a pro team picking some crazy stuff and then they win.
I mean, that to that point, when earlier, Azale was like, oh, you know, these things crop up from time to time in the meta when it's, whether it's the roaming top smite, there's that, the, I forget which team did it, but like the Nocturne that got Giga farmed and hit level 6, like at 5 minutes.
Gigabyte Marines.
Gigabyte Marines. And like they win a game like with that in the weird strat, you know, like weird strategies pop up from time to time. That's why, you know, like you want to see it every time. It's like, what else is what's coming next? And it's just, I understand why people are like, so how much of that's still going to go on? Because
I hope a lot.
Yeah. I hope a lot. It's just, you don't know right now, unfortunately.
Anyways, yeah, I hope more information comes out.
Me too, definitely. TSM, obviously big changes there as well. We got a question here from Ofo. He says, if you were a coach or a GM with control over the rosters, under what conditions would you decide to make a roster swap after only 2 weeks, 4 games?
I can answer this one. When things are not improving, not score-wise, but like mentality in the games. From everything we've heard from other coaches talking about it, like TSM was struggling in scrims and stuff. You have to assume that there was not a great environment. But more concerning is when the players themselves are not aligned with how they're approaching the practice. If you have these big problems that are not getting fixed, sometimes you do need to make a change. And, you know, with Shen Yi's conversation that kind of got leaked on stream and some of his champions queue information, it's clear he's a large communicator. It seems not everyone was down with that potentially. And then, you know, if the problem is how one player is communicating, like, how do you just like, hey, stop being you? You know, like that doesn't really work. And so I can see, even if it's temporary or it's going to last, we'll have to see. But like, you maybe remove him from the environment, let your other four people get on the same page and then try and reintroduce him or something like that. That would be my speculation. This is one I can say I don't have internal information on, but just looking at what's come out.
Yeah. I haven't seen every piece of information because there's so many different...
There's a lot going on right now.
...stories of drama going on. But I picked up on two main conversations around the Shen Yi one, where one was a group in the camp that he is over-communicating, and we've discussed this a lot of times in the past.
Like problems
some,
in the past.
Some people, you know, when, you know, playing are have a bit of stream of consciousness style where you say a lot of extra stuff.
Thresh is in the bush. He's moving over. I think he might hook me here. Look I out. Have, good lantern. Maybe the jungler's. It's like, yeah, okay.
Lots of stuff that will clog communication. And that to me is a legitimate concern if it is true, because you only have so much focus as a human being. You know, your nervous system can only
speak
take
for
so
yourself.
Much. and at some point, you know, lots of audio clouding basically is going to have a detrimental effect. You know, already people, when they first join pro, some will have a very big problem even having any communication, you know, and so you have to slowly adapt to those levels. The other one, that I heard was that the team did not trust in his shot calling.
That's what he had said. There was like something that got translated. I don't know where he posted it.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Like the kind of leak.
Yeah, exactly. That's what came out. That he was basically saying like, hey, yeah, like the team just doesn't really believe in my calls or doesn't really listen to my calls and stuff like that.
And those seem like separate problems to me.
They could be linked, but they could not be.
Yeah, they can be linked and maybe, you know, one can feed into the other. Maybe if there's over-communication, then you start to not trust calls or something like that. But those are separate and I would attack those in different ways.
Yeah. He also said that it was like LCS style is kind of different. He was like, you know, LPL, I think he was, I'm paraphrasing a little bit because I don't remember the exact quote, but it was basically along the lines of like in LPL, you know, jungle and support kind of run the game a lot more with like more aggressive plays. And then he was saying in LCS it was more about like the carries running the game and playing more to like getting the carries the most farm and them kind of running the game in like basically like a slower fashion, right?
Yeah,
was kind of the idea. And I do think it's tough, right? I think it's weird because I remember talking to TSM coaching staff on like why they picked these players, and literally the two things that I was told were mechanics and communication. So it's like if you now don't like the communication or they talk too much, like wasn't this actually kind of screened for in your all your tryouts that I was told about? And like communication was the reason that you got these guys because they're so good at talking all the time. So it's like that is disappointing if that is kind of the reason.
What's funny is that reminds me of CLG the year, because we actually went to the CLG compound and they said a similar thing where communication was the strength that they picked him up for. And I believe it was also cited when he was benched. But I'm not sure.
Yeah,
if that was
they had said something that made it extra troll though, where they were like, "People, I forget what the CLG said, but basically it was a problem where they thought they were getting the solution to, but they're actually just getting a problem." A little bit.
I think it was at the time their comps were very light. Like they didn't have anyone that you know, was pushing plays forward. And so they wanted that in any area. Mm-hmm. And then they ended up in a situation after where there was too much.
To the point about, as Azale was saying about, shouldn't you have scouted this and this kind of stuff? I feel like that's where, to get back to that fan angle, because I talked about it quite a lot from the C9 perspective, but from the TSM one, the communication has been split about, you know, when they made the benching initially, and we talked about this last week, where they're like, oh, believe in our team, trust us, you know, like spring doesn't matter, we're going to improve, yada, yada, yada. And then they bench one of their players.
That was weird.
It was weird. And then the messaging of the benching, when I reread, I already knew what happened, so I wasn't confused when I read it the first time. But if you reread it again and you didn't know that he was benched, it says, your son will be, or Shenyi will be playing for your son in LCS Academy. It's literally written backwards. Yeah. It should say, your son's playing for Shenyi in LCS.
Yeah.
And so, like, there's just been a lot of miscommunications. Then we had the VP of esports, Dominic, on for TSM on Hotline League. And, you know, we were trying to push for some answers about, like, hey, what's the plan going forward and this kind of stuff. And it was, again, very pulled back, cards close to the chest, and, like, not even giving some basic information that you think you should be able to say, like, what's the plan moving forward. And even if you don't want to, like, commit to anything, you say, like, hey, we obviously brought him over because we believe in him, we don't have a timetable on his return, but, like, you know, we want to at the end of the day make the best roster possible and yada yada yada. It was more like, I don't make those decisions, the team does. And so then we were like, okay, who on the team is making these decisions? And it was like, well, I don't want to point fingers at someone. And it's like, but, like, fans just want to know what's going on with their team, you know. And I feel like, I hope TSM Legends addresses this a little bit whenever it comes out this week. But it is something where, like, if you're a fan right now and you're like, so is Yerson the starter? Tactical did an interview where it sounded like he's happy with Yerson, and so they're going to stick with Yerson, maybe. But, like, the coaching staff hasn't said anything. And I think this is another org right now where I'm like, you got to start communicating better to your fans, because people are not happy.
Yeah, it's definitely tough. I mean, I think all the comp stuff is such an interesting discussion as well. You know, and like how much to communicate, if communication is good. And this is kind of becoming a thing in Champions Queue as well, where, you know, there's kind of the debate. Some players are frustrated that, like, oh, hey, some players, and, you know, get in a Champions Queue game, and then you're in this Discord with them, and they just, like, insta-deafen and don't talk. Some people feel like everyone should talk the whole time, you know, because that's, like, the most competitive way to do it. Otherwise, just solo queue. And it's really interesting, right? Like, I kind of see both angles on that, because I also get, if you're an LCS player, you know, it's not your responsibility to, like, come to Champions Queue and teach everyone how to play, right? If you're playing with, like, a collegiate player, just high-ranked solo queue players in there or whatever, that's not your job. I get that. But I also can see this perspective of, you're a collegiate player and or you know, a proving grounds player or academy player or whatever, and you're excited to play with these LCS players and hoping that you can learn from them and also just have the most competitive game possible, most competitive practice environment possible, which is going to include communication. So it's really just kind of like a pretty big discussion, I think, in the scene right now, because I am a big believer in communication and thinking that the more you can talk, like, as long as it is actually pertinent information that's valuable to the team, that's incredibly valuable, right? And, like, that is a big reason why I think some of these players who are, like, especially you see it with supports, where there's players who aren't necessarily super high ranked in solo queue, but seem to always do well in pro. Xsmithie was another guy like this. Mm-hmm. Aphromu has been a guy like this for a lot of years, where he's not always at the top of the challenger solo queue. And it's like, well, why don't they just have, you know, Stunt or whoever, who has, like, you know, friggin' 5 of the top 10 accounts in challenger? Well, it's often because, you know, because of the communication and, like, the presence that they bring to the team. And that's a lot of what, like, shot calling is, right?
Yeah.
And it's super, super valuable.
I feel like it also depends, for the pro players, what they're trying to get out of Champions Queue. Because, yes, if you're trying to win a single Champions Queue game, getting on Discord and tryharding is obviously the right answer. But if you've come from a full day of scrims and you've worked on your communication that day, yeah. Like, people will, I'm working on this matchup, so I'm going to deafen, and I don't really care. I'm working on my own game right now. And, of course, you want to do it in Champions Queue over solo queue, because the players are better and you're going to get tested better and your teammates aren't going to, like, into game as likely. Because it's a
you're
higher
not going to get cleansed new and whatever.
Yeah. Like you're just, it's going to be a more competitive environment to you to practice individual things on still. And I think people should use Champions Queue however they want, as long as it's always you're trying to win the game. But, like, I don't think players should be forced to listen, or no one's allowed to talk kind of thing. I think you just let each player decide what they're trying to get out of it. And I understand there's going to be frustrations, but that's just because people have different priorities.
I definitely am of the opinion that more communication is not better. Let me
more valuable let, communication is better.
Let me put let me put this ideal scenario forward to you, and see if you still would want more communication. If my personal ideal five-person team all thinks about the game exactly the same way, so that they never have to use audio cues, you don't have to communicate, then your reactions are quicker. Then your gameplay is quicker. You also use less processing time to communicate through your vocal cords. Like, I think that is the peak. And part of practicing for pro teams is getting to a place where you can reduce some of the things that you do have to communicate, because everyone understands it inherently and you can just do it.
Of course. So like, In this like make-believe world where everyone has the same brain and thinks the same things, then yeah, of course, there's never
and
been a talk.
It's a spectrum up to that.
Yeah, but I just don't believe that that perfect world exists. And I believe that in the world that we are in, there are just things that I will see that you will not see, even if we all think the same way about the game, are all fully aligned. Like, our screens are just pointed at different things, right? And our eyes are looking at different things, right? Like, I see someone walk across the minimap for a split second on Blip, I call that out. Yeah. I see flash and heal is used bot, like, I time it, and, you know, and things like this, right? Like, there are things that you need to call and spells that you need to recognize that, like, not everyone is going to see. And that's why I think communication is always important. Of course, you want to have the minimum needed amount, right?
Exactly. And that's why I'm saying that's why it's important to get to the point where you don't need as much, yeah, so that you can,
of course,
shrink it down. So, like, more, not better.
Yeah. Yeah. But to me, there's still, like, it's the idea. And maybe we're saying, I don't know. I mean, maybe we just disagree, but maybe we're saying some.
I'll be the third wheel in a second, see if I can.
Because to me, it's like there's so much stuff, like, just giving editorial things is useless, right? Like, the first thing you want to cut out is, like, opinions on anything, is, like, in the game, right? Like, complaining about a matchup, like, like, this is so annoying or whatever. It's like, all that kind of stuff needs to go, like, instantly, right? But I do believe that there's pretty much almost always some level of communication that is going to be valuable, like, in the world that we live in, and in, like, you know, just the realistic kind of version of the game, where there should almost always be someone talking. And that's just kind of how I see it, that there's enough information in the game that is valuable and can be passed on, that there is something worth communicating at almost all times in the game.
Kobe disagrees.
Yeah, I know he does.
Yeah.
Kobe doesn't even like to talk when he's playing solo queue and stuff, right? You know, like, even when you're doing, I know that's one of the things that you've talked about where you find it really distracting. So I know we just have different views on this.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't have, like, you know, like, I'll be in Discord with people and I'll mute the Discord because they're talking about, you know, other shit.
Dude, that anime opening was just sick.
But yeah, I think maybe we do fundamentally disagree, because I think, again, I am focused on, like, a lot of the overload on processing information and having extra interjections. I think you want to get it boiled down to the essentials that need to be communicated. I don't think you're too far off from it, you know, because obviously you want to eliminate extra, you know, excessive stuff as well.
I feel like, for me, the thing about the communication problems that teams I was on ran into was less about, like, oh, we're talking too much. And it's more like, there's a set number of problems you're trying to solve within the game, and that's going to require communication to solve no matter what. And are you solving those problems that you're bumping into as the game progresses? Like, tracking enemy jungler, how do we win this team fight? How do we, like, how many items do you need before we're ready
in
to
an efficient manner?
Right. But I don't think that subtraction is addition in that way. Like, some people don't talk enough. Some people need to be encouraged to talk, and they're not communicating their wave states correctly. And, like, I don't think that, like, subtraction should be the focus. It's about the problem solving. And sometimes it is too much, or it's being communicated poorly. And in theory, you want to get that to the minimum, but I would not make that. I don't think I would look at it as I want to subtract things. It's like, I have a problem I want to solve. What's the issue that's making us not solve this problem? That's usually how I talk about it. I had spreadsheets. Mm. What we did back in the day, I had one of my analysts, this is probably the most mindless job ever, I apologize, but I made spreadsheets of every kind of call that you can make at different points in the game. Mm-hmm. I had that all on a sheet. And then the other way, I had the players' names and who was making those calls and how often. And then I could make a pie chart of, like, how much people were talking, which calls players were making, this, this, and this, and this. Mm-hmm. And then I see that, oh, Quas is communicating 10% of the total communication that's going on in this game. And he made zero calls about his wave state in this five block of scrims. And I go, I probably need to talk to Quas about how much he's communicating about his wave state. And like, you know, I'm trying to find problems and diagnose them more than I am just like, our comms sounded cluttered. Our comms sounded cluttered. You know, like that's how I approached it when I was coaching.
I am not suggesting zero communication, by the way.
It's like a theory, like push the boundary and then walk it back.
Exactly. I'm actually trying to be a proponent of the quality of information. And to me, the bigger problem usually is that there's lots of excess.
Yeah. And that's like, and it's interesting because this is like, communication in WoW Arena is like such a big thing, right? And that is like all my background. So like, I've had countless hours of discussions about this, and it's not a one-to-one with League, obviously. But it's one of those things where it was like the way that we approached it was like basically wanted people talking all the time, and then we nixed things that weren't useful. And until like over time, we had just like deleted all these things that we felt weren't useful from our communication, and we identified the things that were useful. Because even sometimes things that like theoretically, like I could know this or should know this, I just might not, right? Like because
repeating information we are, can be helpful.
Exactly, like we are imperfect. You know, the idea of like even just like talking about like a win condition or whatever.
That's very different than the like more communication is better.
I just mean more communication in that. To me, I think that there is enough valuable information in these games that someone can be talking at literally every moment of the game, and it can be valuable. I'm not saying everyone needs to be talking at the same time, and I'm not saying that like you know, everyone needs to say everything that pops in their head, but I do believe that there is so much to talk about in these games. There's always something. Hey, I'm going to be looking. I'm going to flash on this guy as soon as he's on my screen. Hey, my top lane is freezing against me. I need my jungler to come top and push this in. Hey, like there's always going to be something, and those things are useful. It's just like the editorializing to me is what needs to be deleted more than just like statements of fact, right? And I just think it's actually such a massive part of games at the high level. And when you listen to some of the comms of like the best teams in the world, like so it's like they're often delivering really, really good information. And like
Lucian, get the Lucian.
They're just screaming their heads off.
There are funny moments, but I've listened to like full games of some of these teams' comms. And like there are these like hype moments and funny moments and mic check moments that people are gonna reference, but there's also lots of times where they're discussing like what should be the next steps, and they're identifying like the key things that they need to do.
And the communication system for each team should depend. Like if you have a Mata or a Doinbi, like those guys seem to talk incessantly throughout the game. This kind of stream of consciousness thing that can potentially work with certain players that you put around them. Yeah. Other teams want to have a more free-flowing style. Some teams want to be really quiet.
Honestly, I think the only difference is that we want to get to the same point, and you think there, I think there is more problems with excess useless information, and you think there are more problems with missing valuable information currently.
Yeah.
Unrelated, streaming is counterintuitive, is a bad thing to do if you want to be a shot caller, because you just stream a consciousness when you're streaming to like entertain your followers. You shouldn't do that in a pro game. Don't stream if you want to be a good pro.
Don't agree.
Don't
with
listen
that.
To Mark.
Don't agree 100% with that at all.
Cut that out of the episode, actually.
No. Big,
we want them to stream
I
more.
I arched an eyebrow as a joke. It was clearly a joke.
Yeah, but people are stupid, okay? You know how many times you try to use sarcasm and nobody, they're just right over the head, and they're
I'm
just
sorry.
Think
I'm
serious.
Sorry. All right, get me out of here.
We need, okay.
They're separate skills.
Disclaimer, we would like more pros to stream all the time, more personality, more interest in the league. Thank you very much.
All right. The pause, as we pause here, happened between EG, IMT. Obviously, there was a lot of kind of debate about, like, was it a bug? Was it not a bug? Should they have paused?
Should they have
chrono break? And it was just interesting because there was just, like, Vulcan and PoE were going back and forth on this. Like you know, you now knew that the Baron was low. Well, everyone knows how fast the Baron dies, dummy. Like, we can look at your items. And, you know, just the back and forth, kind of. And then, obviously, Sven got involved. He's taking shots. Revenge is taking shots. Like, it was just an interesting thing. And it was an interesting discussion, because usually that was one of those times where it was like, oh, like the curtain has actually been pulled back a bit, and they just felt like these guys were just having a bit of an argument or a discussion just where everyone could see it.
And I appreciate that, like, they obviously were heated, like they both had their own opinion, but no one was like straight name calling. He's like, you know, we can just check items, right? But that's like not really that angry sounding to me, you know? So like, to me, it was just like cool. Like, I wish pros would do this slightly more often, you know, just like when someone's like, had a great game today, blah, blah, blah. And someone else is like, no, you know, like you did this. Like two people played that day, you know, like
yeah.
It'd be funny to see how, like what their differences of opinion are on like a laning phase. Like, no, you just got lucky because I missed this ability. And like, if I traded this correctly, and like, no, if you did that, I would have done this. It's like schoolyard arguments.
I feel like it's hard though to get into those arguments, especially if one player is much more popular than the other.
Or someone actually just got clapped.
Or someone got clapped, right? But it's one of those things where it's like, sometimes even if you have equally good points, if one player is way more popular than the other player, then you're gonna have all these people dunking on the like less popular player, yeah. Right? Because all your fans.
I mean, I understand why it doesn't.
So it's,
happen,
but yeah. it is cool, and those are the kind of things that I think are really fun, and I would love to see, you know, like ways where players are more willing to have those kind of like honest back and forth discussions or debates about these topics. PoE in general seemed okay with the chrono break. It seemed he was most frustrated with when they chrono broke too. You know, and I think that was kind of the discussion. It was a weird situation, you know, watching it live, and then it was really cool. The production team like gave us all these replays
yeah,
and everything.
Did a great job.
And we got to talk through it and see, you know, ProView and all these things. And I was in the observer thing, so I could actually like go around in game, and I actually got to see that Vulcan was back into the brush before PoE even pressed his shockwave, because he actually delayed his shockwave. There was a discussion when we went to the analyst desk where you guys were talking, and Jat was like, "Well, I think you know he shockwaved."
Whoa,
before
I wasn't
he was
on
in.
That day. I was watching from home.
Excuse me.
Well, Mark said that he thought you were wrong. That's what I heard.
There you go. it was a uniquely interesting situation where like I actually was in the game and got to go and see, oh, like how do you use the ability yet? And we got all these replays. And so it was fun to talk through.
That was really cool because I get the viewer experience this time of not, because normally I'm on the desk and you're like,
yeah.
Yeah.
In the past, I feel like the broadcast has shied away from caster speculation. It's kind of like, just let the
people... I kind of went rogue there. So I don't know if like we're all going to get
well,
to that.
Maybe we'll get into a meeting later today. Like, don't do that again. But yeah. I will say as a viewer, I appreciated.
They've actually always encouraged us. I want to chop this one because this has come up multiple times with community. They have encouraged us to talk about it. Talk about bugs.
Yeah. But I just think that so like that, I maybe went a little bit further because I was like, hey, I think this was a bug for sure.
Well,
and I think there should be a chrono break.
Well, I think agnostic of the, you know, who is right or wrong in the situation, this was a very good call to by production to put the replays and everything
awesome.
Up there.
They smurfed.
That is the way to handle these things.
For sure.
You know, because that's what keeps people in. Normally when there's a pause, I'm out to the bathroom, you know? But if you're going to actually show slowed down replays, fog of war from both sides, everybody gets to be the detective.
My point is, like, I don't think that's ever been done before on the broadcast for the LCS, at least.
Well, they have not been able, in a lot of cases, to give us that.
Sure, but I also know, like, there's times where I'm like, let's look at that. Like, I want to see that replay again. And, like, it's like, oh, we'll just let the... Like, I've been on the desk a million times. There's plenty of times where we're not even, like, you know... supposed to start giving our 2 cents because you get into a situation potentially where you disagree with the refs or whatever. And
oh, really?
Yeah, I've been in that situation before.
Yep.
That's like a long time ago. It's been a while. I don't mean like this was like 2 weeks ago I got this feedback or anything. I just mean there's been times where like the general stance was kind of let them handle it and like talk more about the game. And I actually thought that this was great as a viewer to like really get into the nitty gritty of like how the game works and like if you're in the fog of war but you come in after the ability starts then you actually don't see the animation sometimes and like
that's fine. I've always just talked about it and no one's ever told me not to.
Yeah, I mean I think
it's not they cut away from it. go to the analyst desk. Kobe's gone rogue again.
They don't tell me that it's just not on me anymore. Like,
I mean it's usually less in the moment but more like in meetings where we're like, hey, how much can we say about this? They're like, don't make your own judgment call because it can be dangerous a little bit. But
because I made a call and I was like, hey, like this should be a chrono break, right? And then if it wasn't a chrono break, then it gets awkward, right?
Yeah. And that's just like they erred to the side of caution. It wasn't like someone's in my ear like, stop talking right now. I don't want to make it sound like that. But like I've been in some meetings where we've talked about like what should our approach be?
Where's the line?
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And
I guess that is different, like making a call on what the judgment should be, because then you're actually being a ref.
Well, that's
I made an editorial decision where I just thought, hey, this is an interesting discussion. I feel confident in what I'm seeing, and so I felt comfortable doing that. But yeah, that was a bit of a risk, and maybe you know they wouldn't want me to do that in the future.
But I
liked it, and it seemed like fans really enjoyed.
Just don't do it if you're wrong.
The discussion.
Well, I think
I was right.
I think what made it good too though was going to the analyst desk. They had a different opinion than you.
Yeah.
And I think that discussion was cool because like then you know, whichever way it lands.
Sometimes it was cool that I was right.
Yeah.
I agree.
Sometimes I like that you brought it up at the beginning too. You're like, so Jack was saying the other thing.
Well, I just meant because normally when I'm watching, I don't get to actually then explore it, right? Yeah, we just have to wait for the result.
Yeah, exactly. We haven't had that access.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not about like, oh, Jack had a different opinion than me. Haha, I got him. It was more like, oh, he said that opinion. And I was like, oh, I wonder if he was right. But I was in the game, so I could literally go to the game and I could see the order of the spells being used and like, oh, it wasn't like, because it made sense. Freak actually thought the same thing as Jet. He was like, no, he QWR'd and he wasn't in the brush when he did that. But what actually happened, I went back, he QW'd and then he waited and then he saw Vulcan and Vulcan walked back in the brush and then he R'd. Right. So there was a delay, which allowed him to get back in the brush where he should have seen it. And that's why there was a chrono break. But it was just really cool because it was like, personally, it was fun. And some people were like, well, was it worth having the bug? No, but we already had the bug. The bug happened. The pause was there. Right. So it was
this
like,
agenda that you had, Azale, all week long to be able to do this.
Azale had a button. He was waiting to press. Yeah. My time to talk.
I don't even have to press a button. We already know there's that many bugs in the game. Something's gonna happen.
Shooting shots out the
cross. We just gotta let them through.
Yeah, but it was fun. It was I thought it was a cool moment. And I think again, it speaks to kind of like almost what we were talking about with the teams, with like transparency and being able to like talk through these things. It's just interesting, and people enjoy, I think, the process. Or at least I'll speak for myself. I enjoy the process. I loved the discussion on the analyst desk where Jack came out and said, "Hey, I don't think this should be a chrono break because of X and Y." And then POE comes out and says, "Hey, chrono break was fine, but you guys got the start time wrong because they had these advantages, and the only reason we won the game is because Revenge outplayed them and had the 1v2. Like, those were cool discussions. I love that stuff.
I think it's way more interesting than, you know, people just being like, well, we'll have to wait and see. The draft was this, and you hit the draft 7 times before you start talking about like Taco Bell or something else, you know, like you start podcasting. So yeah. I appreciate, even if it does lead to sometimes some tension, like tension is not a bad thing.
Well, that did leave Evil Geniuses on a 3-game loss
streak.
They
suck now.
So we've made it through all of our intro topics, and we're now on to actual LCS, baby.
Will FlyQuest win Worlds?
Will Evil Geniuses crash and burn after their successful lock-in is where I was going to go with it, because now that is 3 losses in a row. I'm still super hyped for this team. You know, we built so many stories behind the young rookies. They're putting all this effort into them. They brought in such good experience components. LEC MVP inspired over here. Impacting the top side of the map. Still a rock. He definitely entered quite a few of these games a couple times, especially the Karma one where he was roaming around dying.
Hey, they won that one.
But he's impact, so I still trust, you know? How are you guys feeling about the general state of your Evil Geniuses hype post-lock-in success?
I feel like slightly down because I thought they were further along than they were, I think.
On their curve?
Yeah, like you thought like JoJo's going to need some time. And then you're like, oh my God, he doesn't need time. He's just great right now. And I think it's come back to like JoJo needs time. And so like, it's like I got too high on the roller coaster. I probably got higher on the roller coaster than I should have been. And that's on me for like just buying in a little bit more. But I still think they should be a good team. It does look a little worse than I currently, like I don't think I would have thought 2-4. But, you know, it's like the one loss to Immortals is maybe the one where I'm like, ooh. But they beat Dig. They beat, who else did they beat? TSM. And those are their 2 wins right now. Dig has looked decent. But I would have liked to have seen them take down one of the other, like, more certain top teams if they could have beaten 100 Thieves or TL or one of those ones. But I think I'm not ready to completely sell this, you know, farm on them yet. I'm not done with EG. I just think that it's going to take a little bit more time.
Yeah, I don't think anyone should be done because, again, this is going to be a reoccurring topic, but our upper bracket of the LCS is usually only a few teams, you know, few top teams. But this year, it really feels like we have a much deeper roster for very competitive teams.
Yeah,
it's extending very far down the line. So that's why you can even have a team like this where you still think it's very promising and yet they have a losing record.
Yeah.
Because the competition feels really both strong and fun right now with the different directions that teams are going.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as far as like where I'm at with EG, I feel like, so JoJo, I think he's doing just as well in lane pretty much as he was in lock-in. I actually think one of the biggest differences is I feel like he's really struggled outside of lane with positioning and with just like getting stuff done, like with having a huge impact out of lane, because he was really good in lane in lock-in, which like everyone had kind of basically told me, and from talking to players and watching VODs, it was like he's inverse Danny, where Danny was like, ooh, his lane isn't that great, but like get him to that team fight though, and Danny's gonna pop off. And
combine
like,
these two NA rookies.
Exactly. One holds the mouse, one holds the keyboard. And it was basically like JoJo is gonna slam some people in lane, but he might run in the team fights. And I was like, okay, you know, and I watched some games, like, yeah, that checks out. And then we get a lock-in, and he was just good at everything, right? And now I feel like he's kind of come back to earth a little bit, where it's like, yeah, he's still, you know, has, I think, the best CSD at 10 in the league. Like, he's still laning very well, but he has had some really bad team fights. Like, there was the Corki game where he, I want to say he had package and he died twice without getting his package off, where he just like got CC'd and died. There was one at Baron where it was like maybe a 3v4 or something, but he's walking forward on Corki and I was like, oh, well, they can just kind of poke them off. But he just kind of walked up and almost like auto attacked the Nautilus, and Nautilus just hooked him and he died. Like, there was positioning errors. His Akali game, I felt like he really struggled to kind of get much done, and in the Akali game and team fighting as well. So, my hype is not dead whatsoever. I still think that like this is a really, really strong team. I think that they clearly have some things to work on. But we saw that with Danny as well. And EG was a strong team by the end of the year with Danny, even though his laning phase was not his big strength.
And here's my main reason for why my hype is not even close to dead, is that not only do they know what they need to work on, because they've been very clear and they've been very self-reflective in their interviews and on social media, but they are doing the work. JoJo Pyeon is number one in Champions Queue. He is the grind lord. He is still one of the highest win rates in packing all of these games in. So that to me is the super exciting angle for this team. You know, we can continue on having faith in this growth because he's so focused on it, and he's putting in the work. And the rest of the team is reviewing this. You know, is very interesting to hear, like, Inspired's thoughts after it and Impact's thoughts after.
You know, it's even better than a team that needs to reflect and improve.
Just the team the that's
5-1 already.
The
FlyQuest.
Perfect team.
Yeah, just beat FlyQuest. How about that?
Well, Kumo's number
big
two
environment
in Champions.
The
Q,
big
so.
Environment is such a good nickname. Raz is so good with those. All right, let's be real. How many of you are bought in? How bought in
what,
are you?
What is bought in?
You define bought in, and
people start doing this of like, is FlyQuest a legitimate team? Yeah, they're 5-1. They're good. Are they the best team in the league? No. Do I believe that they're as good as Team Liquid? No, I don't. Do I believe that they're going to be top three? Probably no again. But like, this team is good, and are they top five? Are they top six? Yeah, for sure. For sure they are. And I thought they were going to be, where do we put them in our power rankings? I don't know, seventh, eighth? Probably.
I was going to look that up.
Yeah, so
Kobe
can maybe find it. But it's one of those things where it's like, even if they lost the rest of the games in their first half and went 5-4, I feel like they did well. Like, I think if you're a top five team as FlyQuest with this roster, you did really well. So I already think they are legit. I think that like, you don't need to set the benchmark at winning the friggin' title when the benchmark before the season was set at like, are you eighth?
Are you making playoffs?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that they have really, really impressed. I've been enjoying their games. I just like seeing Aframu do well, to be honest. I'm such a fan of Aframu, and just like, he's going out there for the Boomers, and he's, you know, he's winning one for the home team, right? He's just been around forever. He's constantly looking good on all these different teams and showing his value as a pro like 10 years later, I think is so cool. And I do love that he is kind of getting some of that attention as like one of the LCS greats. He doesn't have as many titles as Doublelift or Bjergsen or whatever. Like, he's not the most successful player in the LCS of all time. He's not the greatest LCS player of all time, but he is one of the best. And I would say like, he's probably in the discussion for like top five LCS players all time when you look at like the length of his career and how much he has accomplished and how consistently good he has been over so many years, because it is hard to be that good at something for so long. It takes true dedication and mastery of craft to stay at the top for all these years.
I feel like the team itself just has a lot of cool storylines around it. Both him and Johnson pairing back up. Tuki, you know, like Tukui has...
Tuki?
Yeah, just like the Tuki spam. It's just nice when a team has things...
Tuki is Jose Deodo.
No, is it not Tukui?
No, it's Jose.
Oh, well, I don't even know what's going on. See, I'm just lost. I'm like, hey, we're having fun. Whatever. I thought Jose Deodo was the blind. Like,
I was like, what are you talking about here?
I thought it was a joke about it, Tuki, Takui, and like how you...
Nope, nothing. No, that's Jose Diego.
All right, well, whatever. Point is, there's fun stuff with the team.
There is.
There's a lot of teams who they get on the Rift and there's nothing. There's a lot for FlyQuest. I was also... What?
Go ahead.
No,
you... I was going to say, so I think Elias or someone put it in the doc. So FlyQuest, our aggregate ranking was 9th. I had them at 7th because I'm intelligent. You guys had them at 10th. Ooh.
Ooh. I don't believe you. Someone would have to get a
that was. I remember because that was the biggest discrepancy in our power rankings was 7th to 10th.
All I'm hearing is that Azale was slightly less wrong.
Yeah, exactly. I'm slightly less wrong and I'm clinging to it. I'm holding on to it for dear life because we were all wrong. But that's my point. Isn't like that's really cool. They're having a great season. And even being the high person that put them 7th, they've already outperformed what I expected by quite a bit.
Yeah, I think especially Takui, because I remember being very skeptical, even hearing the recommendations of people as he's coming over. I honestly think the performances from this whole team have been much better than I expected. But he was one of the real pieces of variance.
His question mark.
In the off season coming in. And he has been fantastic for them. So the entire team, though, playing much better than expected. You know, as much as, you know, we always hype up Jose, he definitely needed to have a split here where he again proved that the hype was justified. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, your card, you know, from previous performances is kind of running out. Your credit is getting a little thin here. I'm going to need another.
You make those like time, like, you know, the timelines, like the last bullet point was in 2020 and you're like, want another like high point.
Going to need another statement of, and there you go.
Was it you, Mark, that tweeted that thing that it was like, you know, Jose is basically living off of his credit from like,
No, that was literally a top Reddit thread.
So, like, that
was
someone had said that, and I just
thought.
And then Mark stole
it. I brought it up as like people are starting to feel this way about him.
Okay.
Or a person, and that person got upvoted.
And a lot of people, I saw it on Twitter a lot as well, like because I hadn't even seen the Reddit thread. So clearly a lot of people were like, hey, they are right. You know, this guy is right.
Yeah.
And then it was interesting that it went from immediately when, for the first time, people start thinking, maybe he isn't that good. Maybe he's a fraud, you know, like 5-1, right? Yeah. So then it kind of like rebuilds the excitement around him. But it's been cool. And they have a lot of cool things about them. You know, like it's been fun to watch.
I was going to say also Kumo, he's the only one that's really dragging the team down. -45 CSD at 15.
He's number 2 on Champions Queue. I'm judging everybody.
He's making a joke off of his Smite stuff. Keep going, Mark.
Yeah. It's only worse... person is Hooney at -50. These guys are just such terrible. I'm going to make a whole segment this week. I'm going to pitch it about like how stats are dead in league right now. Like, I just think trying to use stats with the roaming smite tops and
I think you should go the Senna's other way and you should make a segment about how stats are more correct than ever before.
So I had another one about intentionally making bad stats about like, you know, things like that where it's like, oh, wow, this is terrible. You get someone's like, duo procs in like certain games.
You're like, only in season 2022 could we really see how shit, you know, X person who's roaming top support smite or whatever really is.
FBI had a terrible week last week. He played this Senna pick and he didn't even get 10 farm.
That, by the way, Twitch chat will never stop spamming. If someone is playing Senna in the game, it's literally always on the screen because by the time the last one scrolls up, there's a new person who has posted, noob Senna, 4CS, what the...
It's definitely funny. I mean, I agree though, man. The stats, you have to throw out basically every single one of these games.
And it's like over half the games.
Yeah, and then you kill the sample size.
Yeah.
So it's like, all of these people, it's not just the people that are playing it. You have to throw out the playing with, the playing against, everything.
Johnson's CSD is huge right now because Kumo's in his lane 24/7. And the other guy's like stuck under his turret.
The other guy's dead.
Wow, Johnson became the best laner in the league overnight if you just follow stats. And it is a cautionary tale for people right now. Just like you have to be a little careful about just ripping these things off.
Yep. Even mid, jungle, everything is affected by it, right? Yep. So it's really, really weird. TAL got to welcome back Core JJ last week and looked even better. They like looked great with Ayla, and Ayla deserved a lot of credit. And it was cool to see Core JJ actually did an interview on stage after. And he said, basically, he's sad Ayla's not in the league because he's missing out on playing against the second best support in the league.
Oh, shoot.
And so he was kind of firing some shots at all the other supports, but also saying, Ale is legit. Ale is awesome, right? And I thought that was really cool that he came back in and he could have just been like, yeah, like, you know, it's good to be back. Like, I'm crushing it. You know what I mean? You could kind of just talk about like how good the team is doing. Instead, he just immediately went and was giving credit to the guy that was kind of like holding his seat for him. And I thought that was really cool.
What would Core JJ do? He would do the most honorable thing in every situation. That's what he would do.
Say something negative about Core JJ. I dare you.
You know what? I it was also really funny because as he's giving that interview, you know, obviously we don't have fans here, but even the camera people were like giving the when he's like dissing every other support in the league by saying A-list the best in LCS, and I'm disappointed that I, you know, can't play against the second best
other plebs.
And everyone just like all production people and camera people like, ooh, get a Core. Like it was so good.
I mean, I'm glad he's just back in gameplay too. I was casting the game, the second one they played against CLG, and I was looking at the bot lane and the sums, and I was like, oh, it's gonna be a boring bot lane. They're not gonna fight that much. Level 2 gank Trundle flashing in with the Dom Kench. I'm like, okay, never mind.
The Core cross JJ's map, awesome. Start your red on top side, just straight down to bot.
Yeah, you're like, all right, that level 1 gank.
Core JJ, Dom Kench game was such a massive slapping. Holy moly.
Yeah.
That Dom Kench was invading jungle. That Dom Kench was ganking mid. Well, that Dom Kench was just wrecking.
I don't know if I said it, but I was definitely thinking, I was like, Core's on Tom. Like, this is going to be a boring game, you know? And then, no.
The W's, though.
Yeah.
He was very aggressive. Go in.
Yep. It was really interesting. I mean, just seeing how good they look. TL is absolutely terrifying, right? People are, I think, are kind of distracted by TSM and Z9 news right now, but like quietly, TL is looking like one of the best teams we've ever seen in the league. You know, Jat was saying he thinks that they're going to set their record for, you know, best split that they have ever had. He was saying that he thinks they're only going to lose one more game. You know, his guess is like 16-2 is going to be their record, which would be a new record for TL. And it's kind of, you're hearing that and you're like, that's a pretty bold statement. But like, actually, I think they could go 11-1 down for the rest of the split, right? They have just looked so incredible, and they're getting, you know, in lock-in, it was like, ooh, Blippo's dragging them across the finish line in a lot of these games. And now it just feels like they're getting strong performances out of everyone. The Veigar adaption that Bjergsen was the first one to bring out into this Corki matchup, that looked really good. We got to see a couple other people doing it. His Zillion's looking great. He's looking good across the board. You know, Santorin, I think, is always such an intelligent jungler, and he looks like he's playing some of the best league that he's ever played. Mm. I think it's one of those things where it's like they're all doing such a good job that they're making each other look even better, right? They're making it easy to play.
That's why I think when you said earlier in the episode where you're like, wow, the league has so many teams at the top of the standing. It's like, yes, but one is a little bit taller.
I was going to say, actually, that I always kind of laugh inside when this early in the split, people start doing these projections of X team's never going to lose again. You know, they just choose the best team, and they're like, oh, yeah,
really?
We're really close to the...
I'll defend Jet. You want to make a bet? You want to make a
bullying
bet?
Jack, Kobe.
Oh, let's do a... Let's do one of these.
I always make one stupid bet a split, I feel like. I'm due for one. I bet TL only loses one more game for the rest of the regular season.
Yeah, but the important part is, what are we betting?
I always figure that out later. Lead with my heart, not with my brain.
Do you guys want to do one of those spicy bets that you guys use for AD? But then you have to do a whole podcast after eating some like horrible spicy chip.
I mean, I think maybe with some more time, actually, we can get suggestions. We can have interaction with our viewers.
We'll default.
Send us in your suggestions for Mark and I's bet.
Yeah, leave a comment.
But is that the bet? It's going to be one more
game.
And you're on the other side of
it. Yeah.
They're going to lose two or more.
Shake, boys. Yeah. Get it on camera.
We're doing a weird opposite hand shake. Okay.
Maybe you should have turned upside down. Yeah.
I'm not going cross-body.
We both had to go upside down, you know?
Then I have
you can't do it. If I throw it this way, anyways.
All right, it's official.
If there's not a great suggestion, we'll just do like, you have to eat a spicy chip at the start of the episode and see if you recover.
I've done that before a cast. That was...
You regretted that too, didn't you?
That was rough.
Did you see Raz get bullied into making a bet that he clearly wasn't comfortable making?
No, I didn't see this. When was this?
This is about FlyQuest, where I can't even remember exactly what it was, but like, you know, Jet's like, they're a pretender, and Raz is like, no, they're not, and Jet's like, let's do a bet. How many games are they gonna win? And Raz is like, I don't know. And Dash is like, you gotta make a statement.
I don't think that's actually bullying. I think that's just catching him in having to back up what you're saying.
actually bullying. It was just funny.
Put some skin in the game.
I think that's a good thing because people throw stuff like that out so often that, and I'm even guilty of this.
Yeah.
Now making predictions is, you could do it willy-nilly. Nobody cares at all, you know, because like Freak is the best example. You can just throw out as many predictions, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. There's no punishment. They're making them.
Here's my superpower.
If you got
bricks
wrong, someone show up at your house and beat you up.
Yeah.
There's got to be some. Okay. There's got to be some stakes.
That's bullying.
Yeah. You get one punch for every extra game.
Yeah.
Every game over.
Caster's gonna be sweating. It's like Dash comes to you for your prediction. You're just there, just like profusely sweating. Please, Dash. Not a more predict.
I think that's my superpower. Is like even when there's a punishment, I'm still down to make bad predictions.
Yeah.
Like you could do like, I can tase you during the, you know, like you have like one of those buttons that just shock.
Ooh.
Whenever you're talking during the dive, just zzz, one of those.
That sounds painful.
Well, wait. I didn't mean like an actual taser. I meant like, you know, like a pen or a taser. Like, you know,
I am not letting him put anything on me that's capable of shock.
Yeah, I meant like something harmless, like the pen. You know, you push the pen and it zaps you. You ever see one of those? Like the gag electrocution. Not real electrocution.
Well, we'll see. Okay.
Just to be clear.
Electrocution for fun.
Just to be clear, not real electrocution.
The dive does not support actual electrocution of its host.
Or punishment of any kind.
Yeah.
This isn't hazing.
Or bullying.
Yeah.
We're all friends here.
We agree.
Please help. All right. On to 100 Thieves. What needs to happen for you guys to believe that they could actually defend their title now? Because it feels like...
I already do.
You already believe
I
it?
I already do.
Even with TL?
Stop right there, buddy. I already do.
To fly? And
the phrasing that you just gave was kind of weak. That they could defend their title? I'll take that. Boom, I'm in. I believe.
So that they will defend their title.
Yeah, that they win. You see, that,
how about this?
Stronger. Well, that's what defending your title is to me. Are they going to repeat?
If you use could...
Will they win? Here. Will they win this split again then?
We'll give you a little more wiggle room. Defend their title in the finals. And they could lose the defense. They could try and hold against the Siege and lose it. But like,
yeah, and make finals? Yeah, I feel like that's...
When I hear title defense, though, I hear... I
no, they usually mean win.
They mean
but
win.
Kobe wouldn't accept... If you said they're going to win spring, he'd say no. So that's why...
Well, I would not bet that is the most likely. But again, you're trying to gauge in on like a percentage chance here and like power level of 100 Thieves. I think they are showing pretty strong right now. I actually have a decent amount of confidence in this team. Because of some of the versatility that they showed, someday on the Tryndamere game, guess what? Tryndamere is going to become the premier problem in League of Legends, the premier split pusher. They're nerfing Hullbreaker for every range champion. And Tryndamere was one of the only melee ones that used it effectively.
That solves the problem.
And he used it. He was beating Graves already. He was already beating Graves in the split push battle. And now it's going to be half as effective for the Graves. And nothing happened to Tryndamere. He's dodging the nerfs like...
It's time for Malphite.
No problem. So, you know, I think...
Stop
100
picking
Thieves,
Graves into him.
I think 100 Thieves actually look very strong, you know, as far as where this one comes from. I also have recently become a closer fanboy, though.
If you have to predict who wins now, though...
I had to predict, I would say Team Liquid.
And then who's next?
Yeah, I was going to say, who's your second best team in the league, even right now? Is
Your second most likely, right? Because that's where it's interesting to me. If they're not your second or...
Yeah, 100 likely, Thieves would definitely be in my discussion.
So are they your second most likely? That's what
I mean, if you have you're pinching down on me laying out my entire ranking system right now.
Exactly.
And that's a time pressure. Yeah, sure. I'll put them second.
Okay.
Yeah. There's nobody here that makes me think it's egregious not to.
Yeah. No, it's not egregious by any means.
Cloud9 could get up there.
No, I think
FlyQuest probably will fall a little bit.
That's why I think it's interesting even
Evil Geniuses could.
Right now, who is the second best team in the league? Because I think we'd all unanimously say
everyone says TL.
And then you say, well, is it 100 Thieves or C9 are probably the leading two candidates? But I think you could even make the case that like just right now, on a given game, FlyQuest might be the second most likely to win any game against any other team in the LCS.
Yeah.
Like, 100 Thieves has these games where they look a little sloppy. EG has not been particularly impressive. Cloud9, they've won some of these games, but they've fallen pretty far behind. Like, you look at that TSM game that they won. Cloud9 got obliterated in the bot lane again and should have lost that game. It's just TSM is struggling right now as well. The Golden Guardians game, you know, there are some games where, you know, that 4-2, Cloud9 is not like a strong 4-2 where you're like, whoa, no problems with this team.
Yep. And EG's fallen down, right?
Yeah. So
I can definitely see it. And that's, I was pushing for that. And I know it's like not super fair because it's time constraint, But just to get you to say, like, if it was your next most likely, because then that to me, that is a pretty strong statement that it's like, hey, you think they're top two in the league right now.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting because it is one of those things where I do think they were starting to get overlooked and people weren't talking about them as much because they were playing more standard. People were getting really hyped about C9 and Lock-In. Everyone's getting really hyped about EG. So it's like, okay, you're getting bumped down. You're getting bumped down. You're getting bumped down. And now that they are playing just kind of like strong standard League of Legends. So, you know, I think they have kind of like crawled their way back up to quietly, you know, rightfully so, you know, be in that title discussion.
I think even though they lost to them this week, was it EG or 100 Thieves that lost to FlyQuest? It was FlyQuest. Yeah, I think I predicted 100 Thieves to win that game. And like, even if they played again this weekend, I'd be like, 100 Thieves again.
Predict them?
Yeah, I don't know.
Double or nothing.
Yeah, like run it back. I don't believe that. I don't believe my eyes. I don't know why. It's just like, I want to believe.
You've seen much more evidence that 100 Thieves is good than.
Well, yeah, I have like the last year to fall back on. And even like some of the FlyQuest, 100 Thieves are weird because they always feel like they botch the easy things almost in some way where it's like, why did you drop that game versus Immortals when they just like inted in there, you know? But like they did so much other right in that game. And like you're saying, Closer popped off and like they feel like they have more individual carry potential in some ways that I'm still a pretty big believer in 100 Thieves as well.
So how are you feeling about Immortals then? Because Immortals, obviously, for sure, I was very low on them. You guys were like a little bit more.
I think they were ninth.
I'm glad they're bouncing back for me and Mark's sake, or Azalea's just going to be gloating all over us. I told you they were like CLG.
So do you guys?
We said ninth, tenth. It wasn't like we really believed in them either.
Well, we disagreed with them calling them just like CLG, basically, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Oh, I see.
And it was a lot because I had more faith in them winning games because of these players that are now showing up.
Yeah. And they are doing a lot better, I will say. I mean, I think the TSM game was like a pretty monster throw, if I can recall correctly. They beat EG this weekend.
It was the backdoor thing, yeah.
It was the backdoor thing. So I was kind of thinking that, you know, this was almost a 2-0 week, right? It's one of those situations where it was like, okay, yeah, they lost to C9 last week, but they beat 100 Thieves, they beat EG, two teams that are like, you know, supposed to be really good teams, and they're showing some life, right? So I'm happy to see that they didn't just collapse, because I was genuinely concerned after the 0-4 and lock-in, the 0-2 start, that it was just going to fall off a cliff and they were going to be awful all year.
You were concerned even before.
Yeah, I was. But I was really concerned because I thought after lock-in, I thought they were going to have a hot start being this team of veterans that should work pretty well from the word go. And when they looked that bad, I thought that it might just go boom. But yeah, I mean, it's been nice to see them have that bounce back. And, you know, I'll eat my humble pie. I was definitely wrong for now. So it'll be interesting to see if they can continue that. Like, are you guys more bought in, or do you just kind of feel like, you like won a game against EG who's kind of doing poorly? Like, who cares?
I'm more bought in than I was before that they are not the ninth best team. But the scary thing is, it's like CLG and TSM below them. I can see them staying above those two teams for the rest of the split potentially. But the other people they're around, Golden Guardians, Dig, and EG, the teams directly above them, those teams I also still think have potential to win a fair amount of games this split. And so where they are right now to climb higher means that they're going to need to keep improving for me. I don't think that they can just stagnate here and like just slowly climb up the standings, because I expect EG to get better. I think Dig and Golden Guardians being around 500 teams feels about right. They're both 3-3 right now. I could see them continuing that. And so it does put some pressure on Immortals to keep getting better so they don't end up eighth. Because if I said ninth and they get eighth, it's not like I was really that far off in my opinion of my prediction. So like, yeah. I want to see them continue to improve. It looks a little better than I thought, but not so.
But you haven't bumped them into like a different tier, right?
Yeah,
like,
I'd be like, okay.
You don't see them as like a top six, like a playoff team.
Yeah, I thought CLG would be better. They collapsed and they fell beneath you, but that doesn't mean you surpassed my expectations necessarily.
Yeah, well, I had them eighth, so I was one higher than you, so.
Oh.
So
they are where I, you know, kind of.
They are who I thought they were.
Yeah.
What about TSM then? Because you're saying like, oh, go ahead.
I also think Ahri is super, super strong right now. They even already have nerfs slated for next patch for her.
Yep.
So I think I'm hoping that PoE can get some more Ahri games and Immortals can kind of leverage that, because that is more champion leeway for Champ Select than this team I think will normally have, having a lot of good options on this patch. And I also do think they are smoothing out some of their issues for the mid game that really caused them a lot of problems in lock.
Just like in the smoothing out. I was just liking the, it was kind of hidden, you know, it was behind the laptop.
Yeah, for so our audio the, listeners.
The fans deserve to see that, the smoothing out action.
It's, you know, like a dance move.
I was sitting here like this, you know, there's a transition period of the, your different hand movements, and then you end up with this. It works well. Our audio listeners, by the way, you miss out on a lot of great.
You do.
Definitely check out the comedy. YouTube.
Unintentional physical comedy.
We don't call We're out just all these. Dumb. We don't call out these all the time, but they're always happening.
There's always weird stuff. Yeah. Anything else for Immortals?
No, I was kind of curious though. Like, you know, you guys saying like you think TSM could stay below them, but TSM also did get a win and almost beat Cloud9, which would have been a 2-0 weekend. Like, would that have drastically changed? Just, you know, your opinion on them had they actually won that game against Cloud9? Because obviously, like, they were really close to doing so, and it felt like kind of like all eggs in the tactical basket in both of those games. But they did get a dub.
I think for me, it would be hard to believe much more after this weekend, because while they did go 1-1 and could have gone 2-0, they also could have gone 0-2 because they should have lost that Immortals.
Any configuration of two games, Azale. Wowie.
They could have gone 0-2, 1-1, or...
I'm saying, looking at what was happening in the games, they should have lost that Immortals one. You know, Tactical had to like gale force.
The glass is half empty.
The glass stays remain exactly how it was before for me.
Yeah.
They did end up winning one of these games, but they threw a game they absolutely shouldn't have won. And then they managed to claw back off the, you know, a lot of Immortals mistakes where they're trying to dive a tank underneath double Nexus turrets, you know, with Camille all like right after the AD carry almost got killed, you know, so you know you're going to get collapsed on. There were a ton of questionable decisions by Immortals in that game to let TSM win it. And Tactical is playing well, but it's two games of protect the Tactical. And I'm like, well, what else do you have right now? And I just am not super convinced. Things are...
They've got Spica quadra killing 1v5.
That was hella good.
That was really cool. That Zen game was cracked.
Yeah, and I think there's like signs that things are moving in the right direction. I don't want to make it sound like it's all doom and gloom. I think you saw better coordination out of the team with Yersan in than we had seen with the Shenyi weeks, but it's not enough for me to be like, you're no longer 9th, 10th-ish.
Yeah, I mean, it's also going to get more difficult because while the changes to support item and to bounties do not completely nerf and destroy the roaming support top strategy, they do weaken it to a degree. And we're switching patches on this weekend. And already people never really wanted to play this style. And so people spent much more time trying to come up with strategies against it and trying to get better at split pushing and trying to get better at defeating it than they did trying to perfect it. So I feel like there has been an abnormal increase in teams looking to play against it, and it's going to get weaker. So I feel like the one thing that they did show this last weekend, they're probably going to need, you know, something different for this coming weekend. And I don't have a lot of confidence that versatility is there within this team. It could pop up in scrims. It could pop up in practice this week, but I wouldn't say that it's super likely. Spica obviously still very good, but who is going to push this team across the finish line, really?
Yeah, I feel the same way. Any of the 500 teams, Dig or Golden Guardians, any particular thoughts about them? I feel like I said it a little bit for me, where I'm like, I think they look like 500-ish teams, and that's where they are right now. And I expect them to kind of stay there, even with them improving. A lot of these other teams have things that they can be improving on as well. And so if they don't make a dramatic upturn or downturn, you know, like I can see this kind of staying consistent.
One thing I have liked a bit, I guess, out of Golden Guardians is it does feel like they are getting a bit better with their split push on how to kind of close out the games. It feels like they're getting a little bit more comfortable with that, because they have been one of the teams that has actually, you know, played against these smite strategies a few times. And in the early, like the first game, it was kind of like, oh, they like got an advantage through side, and then, you know, and then kind of like flubbed it by grouping and stuff. It feels like they've evolved a little bit with that. I also did like that they are one of the teams that kind of is hopping on some of the newer like evolutions in mid and jungle, which those roles seem like they're changing a bit. Like, we're getting Volley in now. We're getting a little bit of Udyr, even though it's just mostly being banned. We're getting Hecarim. So there's like kind of a new round of picks. And they did come out and have a pretty nice game with the Hecarim, as well as a Blazal bringing out the Veigar.
Yeah.
And he also played the Zillion game. The Zillion game was pretty bad, where I don't think they had a single effective Zillion ulti the entire game.
I think did you say that on cast?
Yeah.
I think you did.
I think literally he got one revive right before the game ended, and he got that was it the entire game. So that one was a bit rough, but like I did like that they were mixing in some different strategies, and they seemed to be, like Kobe's saying, a lot of teams were more focused on what to do against it through split push. And some of my hope is that that can pay dividends even if the Smite top strategy goes away, that you're just more comfortable with your split push macro. And you know, if they can mix in, okay, we're gonna do some like hard engage stuff with Hecarim, we're gonna bring in the Veigar, and we're gonna bring in the Zilean, and we're, you know, maybe we can bring in, you know, more like Camille or Fjord or Jax or whatever, or Tryndamere, and play through side lanes with this work that we have done to beat Smite top, but just against normal strategies.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned closing out for Golden Guardians, because the last game when
we took a long time,
Flowers are casting, they started Baron probably like 7-8 times,
yep.
But they didn't flip it. They didn't risk it. They kept backing off until they for sure got it, and then they finally finished their game where they had a 8,000 gold lead at like 15 minutes.
Too bad you couldn't hear your advice on the build.
I really, he did. I talked to him afterwards.
And not in the game, though. You should be able to type for the spectator, like, Ablalov, go this.
He was like,
you could. You might get fired, but I think you could.
What was I talking about again? Now I'm derailed.
Closing the game out.
Golden Guardians. Oh, yeah. I actually think they do have a pretty promising path forward. I've been just watching so much Champions Queue because it is just so fun. Both listening and watching these players play in their competitive environment. And a couple of standouts, Pride Stalker for one, man, it is really fun to watch from his perspective. These Qiyana combos are like instant. These are some of those ones where like he does way more damage way faster than I actually can. And I need to go, you know, get into practice tool, and I'm learning things just by watching. So there's a real reason to me where I'm like fully bought in. It's not just like kind of gimmicky. Oh, he's the assassin jungle carry player. No, he's insanely good at these assassins. And I want to see him, you know, like hard carry, you know, more LCS games for them. So that to me is something that's really cool about this team and to watch moving forward. Because like in the games, I'm going to be like completely focused on his combos and his angles that he can try and come from. Because in Champions Queue, he's been picking people from screens away, 100% to zeroing them, insta-deleting. And Champions Queue is full of pro players as well. It's not like he's doing these for YouTube videos, you know? Yeah, and making highlights. So.
Absolutely.
Hey, that one's a super cool one to follow. So I'm excited to see the growth of Golden Guardians. That might be their motto that we've always had for this team.
Yep. Well, there's lots of things to be excited about. I've been really enjoying the league, and we're heading into Super Week. Before we wrap, we have one more question here. This one comes from Asian Guy Stream. It says, if you could have any fictional character from any other universe, anime, gaming, comics, TV shows, etc., added into League, who would it be and why? Is it Pokemon? And I added the last part.
Why is it Pokemon? Because you're saying Pokemon?
Yeah.
This is a question where there's so many good answers. I'm going to give you a bad one, but it makes sense. Edward Scissorhands, Gwen Skin.
Just that's the universe. It's just him.
Well, you're just picking a character from any universe to put
Kobe
in the league.
Very
so I'm saying you have Gwen and Edward Scissorhands just running around, snip, snip. I said it was a bad one. Smile,
Blastoise Nami. You just have Blastoise shooting out a tidal wave.
Just turn every league champ into a Pokemon.
Also, though, for yours, exactly. There already is a Pokemon MOBA.
Yeah, but I don't care.
No one wants to play
that. No one plays that game. So what you do is you take the characters that people like and you put them in League of Legends as skins.
So we're Fortnite now.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, we're just Pokemon.
Fortnite
Pokemon
is League of Legends. Jinx is in that one.
True.
It's Arcane, actually.
Yeah. Jinx for Arcane.
Okay, I'll give, I want Thanos in the game.
Yep.
And each stone has a quest attached to it.
Oh my God!
And the designers love being, you know, innovative. Yeah.
Put some mini games in the game.
Some real weird stuff into the game. I don't know what the quests are going to be right now, but he's going to have some interesting thing for each one. And then when you get all of them,
Just the Rengar passive.
He can kill. He can kill instantly two of your players off because he snaps his fingers. Yeah, and there's 50% of your team is dead, but there's five players, so we round down just to make it more even, more balanced.
Yeah, exactly.
That's are you gonna keep the voice lines on for him though? Because he's pretty talkative in the movies, droning on about like his plan and his sacrifice, and it's just like, dude, shut up. You're not like, no one asked you to do this. He has weird motivations. Would you mute his character in the game if he's just droning on about?
No, I never mute.
I am inevitability.
It becomes funny when people play so much and everyone just like knows random champion quotes and stuff. I feel like that's always funny. So even if he has like, he goes into a monologue when he completes one of the quests or whatever.
He just starts ranting about it.
Like, I'm going to memorize that eventually and be able to like recite this.
You have to do the whole monologue before you can use the ultimate. That's the balancing thing. Before you can kill off the two.
You have
so he starts monologuing.
You start
they
recalling,
just
get back on the map. He's still talking, and you're like, all right.
Everyone's like, stall, buy time for Thanos ult. Buy time for...
I didn't mind. It's your turn.
I already said Pokemon. I think there's so many fun skins that could be, you know, fun Pokemon-y skins. Obviously, it's like everyone always says Kennen with Pikachu and stuff. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good examples. And I think it's just like it's something that I think almost everyone knows some Pokemon and has some sort of attachment to it, you know? And that would absolutely print money. So there you go.
Thank you to Atsu. He's a Genshin content creator. And that's, I don't know if he used to
follow I just picked this question because Mark said no. He responded to it with no. And I'm like, Elias, get this one.
Yeah, I was like, Mark doesn't like this guy again. Get out of here. Go back to your game.
Mark's leaking in his...
Yeah, how did you not pick Genshin Impact, by the way? Because you're quietly the biggest gaming degenerate I know now. You know, because if you think about it, like if I brought in my laptop to work to like play WoW in the office, everyone would be like, "What? Look at this guy." But then Mark does that.
I go the other way. I'm thinking about like lead characters I want in Genshin usually. I'm like, God, I just wish Yaimika was Ahri instead.
Yeah, you see, we are just the ancillary content here. His real content is Genshin, and he must pull us into that.
I'm just slowly mixing the two together.
All right, well, that'll wrap it up for us for now. Remember, if you're watching us on YouTube, hit the subscribe button, please. The producers, they beat us and we don't get out. Just kidding.
Oh my God.
This episode has had so much violence in it, Azale.
Don't miss an episode of The Dive when we return. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor.fm. Remember to submit your questions. We love hearing from you on Twitter, YouTube comments, and Anchor.fm. The questions have been great. LCS continues with the first super week of
Super
the split
Week
on Friday. Cloud9 versus Dignitas, 2:30 p.m. It's going to be a dope week. Don't miss it.